Indeed, indeed. With our special guest tonight, Jim Rawls. I've got to tell you, when I started doing Coast to Coast, that's when I started getting interested in preparedness as well. Before that, nah, not at all. I didn't even think about it. But now, after talking to so many guests and listeners, I'm convinced you have to be ready. You have to be ready. So we'll come back in a moment. We'll take final phone calls for the hour on Coast to Coast AM. Jim, are people under a lot of strain? For example, in Seal Beach, California, a guy goes ballistic, kills several people under, you know, duress. What's going on with people right now, Jim?
Well, there's a lot of people, especially because the economic conditions that I think are kind of near the breaking point. And a lot of what we see, the emotional outpourings that we see with the protesters, with the Occupy Wall Street and Main Street campaign that's going on, I think it's evidence that there's a lot of very frustrated people. And I don't think it would take a lot to push people over the edge. If we were to see a major disaster, there's definitely the possibility that we'll see widespread riots, looting, home invasions, you name it.
Is it smart to put a sign out in front of your door, armed house?
Well, no. I think that it's best to just kind of blend in. You know, I often have people say, well, can I string concertina wire around my house? Well, that might make you look like you have something worth protecting, something very valuable. And then you might get blitzed in the middle of the night, you know, have a blitz attack on your house. So it's best to just kind of try to blend in as much as possible. You don't want to build a stainless steel yurt, you know, for a house. You want to have architecture that blends in. That's my general guidance.
All right, let's go to the phones again. Let's go to east of the Rockies, going out to Connecticut, Middletown, Connecticut. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, George and Jim, this is an excellent show. George, this is one of the most important subjects that you'll probably ever offer on your program.
Well, thank you.
Just a couple of things, if you could don't mind commenting on, Jim. You know, you obviously can't predict what disasters may crop up at any given time. If you could comment on bug-out bags in case you can't stay where all your items are stored, you have to leave, and some of the things that are best put in those bags would be a good thing. Also, as far as you say storing food and water, storing toiletry items such as toilet paper and toothpaste and things like that are also a good thing. Water, you know, you store a lot of water. If you store a lot of water, after a few days or even a few weeks of having to use this stored water, especially if you have a family with young children, it gets a little mundane. So, you know, storing things like flavored powders to go along with the water, give your food a variety, in other words. And also remember to prepare storage items for any pets you have. And the last thing I was going to mention, if you don't mind, is if you are in a group of people and for any length of time, a lot of people don't realize this, but if, you know, there's always going to be a leader in that group, and that person is the one that should be given the most nutrients and the most food to keep them healthy, if you don't mind commenting on those.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Start with the bug-out bag. That's a topic that has been discussed almost to death in most of the survival websites and in my blog as well. There's a tremendous amount of detail in my blog's archives. Again, it's survivalblog.com. But the basics for a bug-out bag would be a good quality backpack that's not going to extend above your shoulders because you want to have 360-degree awareness. A typical backpacking backpack has a high frame, and it's going to block your rear view. And then you're going to pack in that all the essentials depending on your climate. You know, if you're in Florida, your bug-out bag is not going to have a large sleeping bag, for example. But if you're in a northern state, it'll be a must.
Good point.
You're going to want to have a LED flashlight, which will give you the longest life out of your batteries. A typical filament flashlight eats batteries, but an LED flashlight can go days and days and days on the same set of batteries. Some compact food. You're going to want to have some emergency signaling equipment, self-defense tools. Hopefully you live in a state where concealed carry is legal and you'll be able to carry a gun, but failing that, you can at least carry some more low-key self-defense items. And again, we've discussed those in detail in my blog. I mean, even a walking stick or a cane or an umbrella can be used as a decent weapon with the right training.
Would you buy a taser, Jim?
I'm not a big fan of tasers because they have some limitations. They're certainly not going to help you out if you have multiple attackers coming at you.
No.
Nothing is quite as convincing as a 45 automatic. It's a multi-purpose weapon against multiple attackers, and it's something you can carry on a day-to-day basis. Although I don't think of handguns as a primary weapon. A handgun is basically just a tool that buys you some time so you can get to your primary weapon.
Yeah.
A handgun is not a real good stopper, but it's something that you can have with you all the time.
Let's go to Tom in Ledyard, Connecticut. Go ahead, Tom. Thanks for holding so long.
Yeah, how you doing, fellas? You know, the thing that bothers me today is we're letting people out of prisons early because of overcrowding. We've got a situation with unemployment where the government doesn't want to pay people any more money for being out of work so long. The government, everybody's relying on a messiah to be president of the United States. That's not going to help anybody. I prevented a 9/11 from happening in Connecticut and lost my job. They say if you see something, say something, and I did, and I found myself out of work. So moving to small towns, people in small towns, they have to know each other for a long, long time. So that's a touchy subject. You got to really establish yourself. So sometimes
I really recommend that people do is they get involved in their local paramedic organization, become an EMT, or join the local volunteer fire department. That's the quickest way to become an insider in a community rather than being seen as the expendable new guy. Get involved in your emergency service organizations. Join the local ARRL affiliate ham radio club, for example, as well. You'll learn so much about the community and make all those important contacts very quickly if you get involved in organizations like that.
Okay, thanks. Let's go to Olay in Hawaii. There you go, west of the Rockies, way west. Go ahead, Olay. Oh, you're breaking up too much. Sorry. Karen, though, is in Walsenburg, Colorado. Go ahead, Karen.
Good show, gentlemen. Very informative. George, a quick thing for you. You were talking about water storage.
Yeah.
You can Google cistern, and you can find cisterns that can be buried that will hold anything from 1,200 gallons to 10,000 gallons.
Okay.
And yep. Also,
poly tanks that are available fairly inexpensively, and even for someone living in a typical house on a city lot where they don't have room for a cistern, there's a fairly inexpensive gizmo called a water bob, B-O-B, and it's an insert that goes in a standard bathtub, and that way you can fill it up. It's a giant plastic bag with a spout, so you can fill up water that's safe to drink and store it in your tub for short-term emergencies. They're fairly inexpensive, and again, you won't have to run that water through a filter. It'll be protected from the grunge of your tub because it's an envelope.
Right. And also, as far as people living in the country like I do, I have a small ranch. People can start a off-the-grid system fairly inexpensively. They look at systems online that run $20,000, $25,000, and actually you can start building one at about $2,000 to $2,500 just by doing the research on the Internet. You're talking about people who have been through disasters. I went through Katrina back in 05, and I was just north of New Orleans from the north side of Lake Pontchartrain. But we had no water, no lights, no gas for several weeks. And if it wasn't for generators and batteries, car batteries we used to operate our ham radio equipment, we had no communications or whatever. And Jim was correct when he said that the cockroaches will come out of the woodwork. We had to set up a full-time security at the house.
Oh, yeah.
And we caught several people trying to break in to steal whatever they could. When the roads are clear, I was with emergency management down there, and I was transporting MREs and water from a staging area, excuse me, gentlemen, to shelters when I was stopped at a stop sign, and I was ambushed by about 9 people, 2 with firearms, and they emptied out my vehicle. I had a sidearm with me, and I'm retired military police, so I was prepared to use the weapon if they had become more threatening with their rifles.
You never had to pull it, though, did you, Karen?
I had it pulled on my lap, yes.
You were ready then?
Yes.
Ready to go.
And so people need to realize that if we get into a blackout situation where we have no power, as Jim said earlier, civilization, the veil is going to fall away very quickly. And I have to admit, I am a survival instructor myself, also a communications instructor for amateur radio equipment. And I wanted to ask Jim his opinion of sheltering in place in a metropolitan area. Mm-hmm. Most people are going to go into a state of denial, and I just want to get his opinion on it.
All right.
Yeah, if anyone who's in an urban area, if there's a major disaster, should try to get out ahead of the Golden Horde. They need to be on the road immediately. That's why it's important to have pre-positioned the vast majority of your supplies at wherever you plan your retreat, because you may only have one trip out of town, and you want to have your bug-out bag packed and always keep 3/4 of a tank of fuel in your vehicle and just be ready to hit the road immediately. Because you don't want to get stuck in the world's biggest linear parking lot, which is what the highways are going to turn into. I do recommend that people get out of urban areas immediately, because your statistical chances of surviving a grid-down collapse in an urban area, if you try to hunker down in an apartment and wait for your neighbors to die off, that your chances are just infinitesimal of surviving that. I mean, the chances of just being able to cook food and have it not be detected and have your door bashed down will be almost impossible. There's just too many things that will tip your neighbors that you have supplies, and they'll be on you immediately. So I recommend that people link up with country cousins or acquaintances that live way out in the country and pre-position supplies there, because odds are you're only going to have one trip out of town and you're going to have to just jump in your car and go. If you spend 2 days meticulously packing your car, you're not going to make it out of town, because by the time you hit the roads, there'll just be enormous parking lots with everybody run out of gas.
Absolutely. And I share your concerns, Jim. I think it is not if, but when. Something is going to happen that is going to cause us to have to scramble and get ready to take care of ourselves and the people we care about.
Yes, I think you're right. The chances are, in our lifetime, we will see a major disaster, and it could be big enough if the power grid goes down that it could cause major loss of life. The power grid really is the linchpin. If the grid stays up, we may see a situation like the Depression of the 1930s,
plus a little extra crime and rioting and looting. But if the grid goes down, all bets are off.
Well, and that'll happen with something severe, in some kind of EMP pulse, a X-flare, something like that could cause the grid to go. The grid is not insulated against that.
Right, and as I mentioned earlier, the grid is also vulnerable to terrorist attack, whether it's a software attack on the SCADA systems or a physical attack on the infrastructure. Power substations that are scattered all over the country are not well defended. I mean, there's only a single fence. There's not even a standoff fence. So somebody with a high power rifle can start plugging away at the transformers inside those substations, and there will be no power. They will short out. The local power, at least, is going to go down. And unfortunately, there aren't a lot of spare transformers.
No, there aren't. You're absolutely
right. Some of
them,
are custom built in Switzerland and, have to be shipped in. So there's a lot of vulnerability to the power grid.
What do you think the inventory is of power companies with transformers?
Oh, in any given district, they may have two or three spares. But if terrorists take out 20 or 30% of the transformers, they're out of luck. There's going to be whole neighborhoods, at least, served by individual substations that are going to be offline for weeks, months, or even years.
Okay, let's go next to La Crosse, Wisconsin. Go ahead, Gene, you're up with us.
Yeah, this is Gene from in La Crosse, and we had EF2 force tornado. I hope I termed that right. And thank God, a small area of La Crosse, which got affectionately called Mini Joplin, which is we kind of did that in recognition of the people in the Joplin, Missouri, which my heart goes out for all of you that have survived, and any of you that are listening, spread that word to one another that somebody does care. And I am multiply disabled and lived in handicap housing, and we were at ground zero. And I had to be taken from my home, and I wasn't sure if I was even going to have a home left, because they were talking gas leaks and everything. And
sure.
We were without power for a few days, and I'm just glad I had a Concord stuffed freezer, I just pretended like I didn't have.
You brought up something interesting there, Gene. I don't know how long a freezer will be able to keep goods in there, maybe a couple days without power before everything thaws out. We're coming back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with final phone calls. We'll be back. On our next Coast to Coast program into Friday, I'm jumping ahead a day or so. I want you to know about Christian Day joining us with his story, The Witches, Book of the Dead, followed by Open Lines. So we're taking a little head start on Halloween for you on Coast to Coast AM. When we come back in a moment, let's take some final phone calls as we talk about preparedness on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Jim, as we've talked about water and weapons, did you catch that story where the ATF is denying handgun permits to those who use marijuana for medicinal purposes? So they're closing in on a lot of people right now.
Well, yes, they are. Although under federal law, I guess they're pretty well forced to demand that, because that's one of the federal statutes, is that modern firearms cannot be sold to anyone who's a habitual user of marijuana.
Yep, 11E on the application.
Yep.
Let's go next.
That yellow form.
Yep, that's right. Let's go to Los Angeles. Go ahead, Ryan, first-time caller.
How you doing?
Good, Ryan. Go ahead.
All right, I'd like to make a remark about the hacking the database thing. One of our drones was just hacked, a U.S. drone, and it's being tracked by someone. So people, and also a bunch of kids, have hacked the CIA website, State Department website, so that's really only a matter of time. But my primary question was, what are people going to do without the medication that they need to survive?
Well, that's a good question. Throughout all of this, Jim, what happens to people who need medication to get by? They're not going to be able to get to the pharmacy, are they?
No, they're not. In a short-term situation, people with chronic ailments that require medication, I highly recommend that people stockpile as much as they can. I realize that there's insurance limitations for a lot of these things, but do the best you can to stockpile. Look for alternative treatments, whether they're herbal or whatever, where you can basically grow your own. If there's any decent alternative, whether it's you have a blood pressure problem or whatever, there are some natural alternatives. Unfortunately, though, for anyone who's a diabetic, someone who has COPD, someone who has sleep apnea that needs a CPAP breathing machine, unfortunately, they're going to be out of luck and in a really long-term situation, a grid down collapse, because there won't be resupply on medications. And at that point, people are going to have to make some very tough decisions within families.
Yeah, well, no question about that. Jeff, truck driving in Kansas City. Go ahead, Jeff.
Good morning, George.
Good morning. Hi.
Hey, I didn't hear you talk about alternative fuels.
I'm losing you, Jeff. I'm losing you. I'm going to put you on hold, and I'll see if Tom can get a better signal for you, because you were waiting for a long time. Let's go to Todd in Garden Grove, California. Todd, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Well, hi, George. Very nice to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Have me on the show. Anyways, getting back to what you guys were talking about, the survival things, a lot of people aren't aware of. It's a class that you can take. It's called CERT, C-E-R-T, mm-hmm. which stands for Civilian Emergency Response Team. And it's pretty much...
CERT training is definitely worth taking.
Oh, yeah. And this CERT thing, anybody can take this. And you learn, basic first aid. You learn all this type of thing. So when you have a disaster, your neighbors and stuff, you can get together on this. I was talking to your gentleman about the San Diego power outage we had out here.
Sure.
It took the whole entire San Diego County area. Well, the HAM guys came in and they did some communications where some of the fire departments actually had gone out. Because all the HAM guys have repeaters on all these mountains all over the country, and they're all on backup generators. So when the power goes out, we can talk.
Well, then, and that's a good point, too. The HAM radio operators, Todd, are critical in emergencies. The CERT training, James, do you do it online or do you have to go somewhere?
Typically, if you're going to be joining a local CERT organization and take local training, but it's all the curriculum is actually developed by the federal government. It definitely is worth taking, but as with any other government-developed curriculum, you got to realize that they have their own set of biases. So, like for example, in the CERT training and in the FEMA training, when they have refugee relocation. Always top priority is disarming everyone, for example, as they get processed into a facility, a shelter or whatever. So recognize that there is a bias there in the curriculum, but if you can get past that, the rest of the training is quite good and well worth taking. As for ham radio, I highly recommend that people get licensed, get the training, get together in your local ARRL affiliated club. Each new ham will have a mentor. It's called an Elmer. And that Elmer is usually a senior level ham who will help mentor
someone who's just learning about ham radio and really bring them up to speed. It's a wonderful experience, invaluable skill, both for short-range and long-haul communications. And if nothing else, every family should at least have a shortwave radio so that if we do have a grid-down situation, you'll at least be able to get some kind of news, either from ham radio operators or from overseas, so you have some idea of what's going on. And some of the radios that you advertise from CC, from C Crane, yep, like the CC radio, they also sell some excellent shortwave receivers.
That's right.
You want to make sure you have one that has single sideband capability, that a BFO, so you can demodulate sideband traffic and demodulate Morse code.
All right, let's go to Debbie in Medford, Oregon. Hey, Debbie, go ahead.
Yes, I'm looking at buying a gooseneck four-horse with living quarters because I'm in the middle of one of these little southern Oregon towns.
And yeah.
Not so little, and I don't want to hang around here. Sorry. I'm also getting a milk goat here pretty quick.
Okay, well, that's one good approach. Although, you know, I generally don't recommend mobile retreating because eventually you're going to run out of supplies. There's just a limit to what you can carry. Even in a big RV, you're going to run out of supplies. You really need to have a destination. And if now I assume you're getting a four-horse trailer with a sleeper in the front because you have horses.
Yeah.
That by all means, bring your horses, bring all your tack with you, because in a long-term grid-down situation, when everybody else is out of gas, you will be sitting pretty if you have well-trained horses.
Well, that's another thing, too, Jim. I mean, we saw the Arab oil embargo back in the 70s. What happens if we get a major outage of fuel supplies? That, too, can shut down the country.
Oh, it sure can, yes, because the amount of liquid fuels that this country depends on is huge, and a lot of it's imported. Also, not just oil, but also natural gas. A lot of that comes in the form of liquefied natural gas, LNG, and there's only, I think, three or four LNG terminals, a couple of which are on the Gulf Coast. They're very vulnerable to terrorist attack, and if those were taken down, we could see an economic collapse in this country just for want of just natural gas by itself.
That's right. That's right. When people are putting together their preparedness kit, do they sometimes miss something?
Oh, they often do. I recommend that people go through the lists that I have at my website. Again, it's survivalblog.com. Typically, though, people don't think in terms of medications and carrying a prescription for their eyeglasses with them. They'll
That's right.
have a fairly elaborate kit, but what you need to have on your bug-out bag is a big note that says, don't forget, and it'll be some items that are in your refrigerator, like some of your medications and spare batteries. You've got to pull those out and stuff those in your bug-out bag before you go. Those often get overlooked.
You know, there's an old Twilight Zone called There's Time Now with Burgess Meredith, where he was one of the last people around, and he stepped on his reading glasses, or he broke them, and he couldn't read anymore. And
yeah.
I think he was in a library. What a tragedy if you have to have glasses, and you have one pair, and you break them.
Yeah. Now, there's a company called Zini Optical that sells glasses for incredibly low prices. You just mail them your prescription, and they also need the special measurement, which is their interpupillar distance, which is the distance between your pupils. They need to know that. But they'll sell glasses for $3 or $4 a pair. So there's no reason why people shouldn't lay in a supply of four, five, six pairs of glasses. Leave one in your bug-out bag, one in each of your vehicles, and one at your retreat. That is absolutely crucial.
Let's go to Tim in Houma, Louisiana. Tim, you're up with us.
Hey.
Go ahead.
George and Jim, look, I started listening to you, George, the night you started, brother.
Super, Timmy. Thank you.
Oh, it's great. Look, let me put us in remembrance that I accept everything y'all said. Me and my dad and some people, we prepared in the 70s for this when Mountain House just started with freeze-dried ice cream. But let us realize that people do come through in these disasters, especially the United States. You know, there's an intrinsic character to all of us. As you said earlier, even the criminals going to stick together out of an honor system. But there is this intrinsic built-in thing. I call it faith. Anybody can deal with it, where we jump in and we help in the moment of time, even if our life is dependent on it. The earthquakes in California, everybody jumped into all them destroyed structures and the highway and got in there before the medical people. And Katrina and all this stuff, they had profound people doing things. People from all over the country, medical people were coming down here and they wasn't let in. But that intrinsic character, that ability, that upbeat part, that we you can bring it out in people, as you all know, because y'all deal with a lot of people. George, you're always polite, friendly. You're doing a great job, man, of educating people. And in this regard, I'd like to say to bring out the best in people. There's a lot of aggravation due to this. There's a lot of frustration. And I would suggest people don't get aggravated, get educated. Don't get frustrated, get educated. Don't go into retaliation, which is, of course, I don't like to say that word because it educates them. Don't go into retaliation. Go into education. There's a lot of good stuff going on. Jim's doing a good job. George, you got 10 million people listening to you at night. I figure minimum. There's a whole lot of us. And in America, even if the money drops out tomorrow, it'll be a matter of bartering with each other. And we, unlike the 30s and everything else, we have infrastructure. The interstates are made. There's technology. There's all kinds of conveniences and things that we can use at our disposal for ingenious things. My son played with hydrogen and brought us to the International Science Fair, I mean, in his backyard. So I just wanted to say that the intrinsic character of people that we are all familiar with is another note to say. I call it, work like everything depends on me and pray like everything depends on God. But
that's well said. I agree with you, Tim. I think when push comes to shove, most people will come through to help each other. That doesn't mean the thugs aren't going to be around to try to take advantage of us. But I think, James, would you agree? Most people will try to band together.
Well, I think they will. And my long-term view of prospects for America, even if we go through a societal collapse, is that we'll come out of it much stronger than before. And if nothing else, we'll probably have a much more libertarian society. We will probably have a much stronger emphasis on self-reliance and self-sufficiency. Families will have a deep larder again for each family, and will end up with a society that I think will be much more resilient. So, yeah, I do have a lot of hope that we'll pull through this, and it takes, as I often write, it takes faith and it takes friends to survive. You can't do it just by yourself.
No, you can't. Let's go to Helen at Virginia Beach, Virginia. It's your turn, Helen. Go ahead.
I have three things to discuss. One was guns. If you have a gun, and hopefully you do, empty all the bullets. Make sure you have emptied all the bullets and get used to your gun, because some guns are really hard to pull the trigger. And you'll think the gun's not working, and it's just got a hard trigger. So empty them, make sure they're empty, and point them away from you, and get accustomed to your gun. The second thing, I'm insulin dependent. So the secret with that is they watch you every month, so you really have to be careful. But if month by month you, like 2 or 3 days ahead, you end up, I have one bottle as a survival bottle now, because I've done it for years to make sure that I got ahead on my insulin. So do 3 or 4 days ahead of time,
right.
Call in on it.
It's also very important that you learn how to keep insulin cold even without electrical refrigeration. And right. I had a link in Survival Blog just a week ago about how using just a terracotta pot and sand and water, you can make a primitive refrigerator that you can keep your insulin cold with. It's very low-tech, but foolproof. And in terms of firearms, yes, it's absolutely essential that people train with their firearms a lot of dry practice and a lot of live fire. Get the training. I'm often quoted as saying, owning a gun doesn't make you a shooter any more than owning a surfboard makes you a surfer. You really need the training to go with it. So get in touch with your local shooting range, your NRA-affiliated club, and again, the Appleseed organization has some excellent low-cost training.
Indeed. Jim, we're almost out of time, about a minute or so left. Tell us where you can get your book, Survivors.
Yeah, Survivors is actually number 3 on the New York Times bestseller list right now. You can get
it
through Amazon or Barnes & Noble or any of the other major internet sellers. And it'll be available through most bookstores and will soon be available through all the military exchanges as well. If you want details on it, just go to my website. Again, it's survivalblog.com. Survivors is actually my second novel. The first was called Patriots, which is also a bestseller, and I also published a book called How to Survive the End of the World as We Know It. That came out from Penguin Books. It was also a bestseller and is soon to be produced in 9 different languages around the world.
Very good. Thank you so much, Jim Rawls. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Ross Missel, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.